You're listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Trey Lyle, coming to us from Kansas via Zoom. Trey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Matt. Excited for our guest. He tweeted a question. He's the only one to tweet a question for us last week, and it resulted in this time I really got to pick the guest, as you typically do. So I picked the guest this week, and we got a fun guest for the show. Excited for it. And this is what we'd like to call the Rob Manfred bashing episode of the Foul Ball Area.
Yeah, a lot of news around Major League Baseball yesterday. Rob Manfred is not looking too good right now. And joining us to talk about that and some other things on the show this week is Andrew Wallace, former sports talk show host that Trey knows from his time at ESPN Richmond. So, Andrew, thank you for joining us. And I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts about Rob Manfred and the whole Major League Baseball situation right now as well.
Yeah, mixed on being here because I thought we'd be talking positive today, or at least maybe I hoped we would be, but obviously we're not. And yes, Trey, that tweet, although Mike Trout literally just tweeted out about an hour ago that, you know, he's in, let's do it, tell him when and where. So Mike Trout's kind of starting stuff up on Twitter, trying to galvanize the troops again.
Yeah, and I might start liking Bryce Harper if he started playing for the Eagles, so we'll see what happens. Yeah, definitely. It's a weird time in Major League Baseball, and I wholeheartedly, if you asked me last week, thought we'd be sitting here by this point talk about who do you think's going to win the World Series, and be way more positive. But then, of course, Rob Manfred, after on Wednesday saying during at the beginning of the MLB draft, he was like 100% we're going to have a season. He says, "Oh, I don't know, we're going to have a season," and so I would say a majority of people were with the players at this point. But wholeheartedly, I think everyone is now behind the players, and the players are just, I think, taking a right stance of, we're tired of this, and let's just play ball.
Yeah, sign of bad leadership. You want your leaders to show conviction, and you say one thing one day and then kind of flip it 180 the next day. I think Rob Manfred has kind of consistently been scrutinized, and I don't know, guys, like it kind of seemed to me like there was a bit of a competition between MLB and NBA to see who could be the first to get back. But now, like, there seems to be this weird dichotomy between the two, even though they kind of claim they're on the same side, but they're really not. It's very strange.
I like what you said when we started talking to you about you thought this was going to be a positive discussion. I think that every week when Trey and I get together, I'm like, all right, we'll have some positive stuff to talk about. And then we get about halfway done with the episode and it's like, wow, this is pretty negative. But that's just the way that baseball and really the whole sports world has been over the past couple of months.
Yeah, no, it's been frustrating, and it's weird because like this void of sports has caused me to like focus on a lot more other topics, which is good, I think. But also at the same time, like, you know, I feel like we're getting way far away from some of the issues that are important and are worth talking about. And I do think like having sports back can solve some of the problems. I'm not gonna sit here and say they'll solve all of them, and I certainly don't want to stop talking about them. But like, these athletes are prominent figures in our world that have platforms, and you know, seeing them, you know, play the game and do what they do with the highest level is inspiring to a lot of people. And I think as a country, we kind of need that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think an issue that Major League Baseball has struggled with over the past couple months, and really honestly under Rob Manfred's tenure, is optics. And I think it's one of the thing the NFL has struggled with a lot. And I think it's something that sports leagues struggle with. I think the only league that really is good at handling the optics is the NBA a majority of the time. And you have to tip your hat to Adam Silver, which I've said is probably the best commissioner in sports, as he's has somehow this great ability to kind of really work with his players yet still appease the ownership. And that might just be to the NBA's credit, but Rob Manfred and the ability, starting with the Astro sign stealing scandal and not handling that probably as well as he could, to leading to this labor negotiation, which was an agreement a couple months ago. And now they're trying, the owners are like, well, we're going to lose more money than we thought, so we need to change it. So how do you feel about like Rob Manfred's leadership in this kind of tenure in baseball?
Well, I just don't think he's a good listener. At the end of the day, one of the things I've learned, you know, in this weird void and I've always known it, but it's just something that like that you learn to express, is that the best leaders are the best listeners, and then they follow through with it. They hear what their constituents are saying, they follow through, and they actually execute in what they're trying to do. And like Rob Manfred to me just doesn't really ever come off like that. It just doesn't seem like he's listening to his fan base. It seems like he's kind of scrapping to try and fix problems that may or may not be there. And I've always said, you know, the uniqueness of baseball, like the dimensions of the parks, the differences between the NL and the DL, or the NL and the AL, excuse me, those are unique things that make baseball different from other sports. And not all sports have to be the same. They don't have to all be, you know, confined into this tight little box. So I just think he struggles to listen and really understand and pick up on what's important. And he just doesn't walk away from meetings or conversations with the best takeaways. And I think that's been demonstrated pretty clearly right now.
Yeah, I saw a tweet yesterday. I don't remember who tweeted it, but it summed up his tenure pretty well, saying that his legacy is going to be trying to shorten games, and then this year trying to shorten the season, and that during his tenure, he's tried to have as little baseball as possible, which is not a good look for the Major League Baseball commissioner.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a meeting where he tried to meet with a bunch of people who don't like baseball, and he listened to them, and that's kind of been his modus operandi. It's like he's only kind of listening to people who don't like baseball. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend to you guys that baseball is my favorite sport, but it's certainly been a childhood love. I mean, I got a Busch Stadium, you know, architectural design on my wall. I've been a Cardinals fan my whole life. I was really proud of the Nationals when they did what they did. And obviously this area in Richmond, great for the fan base, but like, it seems like he got together like a group of people and tried to bounce ideas off of them, but none of them are really baseball fans. And that's been like his textbook, his Bible, so to speak, as to how to go about his tenure.
And I like to compare the NBA and Major League Baseball, because basically over this last decade, since really Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, that kind of era, it's been a battle for that second sports league in America, because the NFL is the NFL and they're going to be fine. But both leagues have tried to innovate new ways to kind of change the game in different aspects. And I think the NBA has done it a whole lot better than Major League Baseball, and whether it's an all-star format or it's the game just naturally evolving. And Major League Baseball seems to be in this where they probably some aspects need to change a little bit, like a shorter season than 162 games. I'm not fully agree with, because there's moments in the season where I'm like, can we get this over with? But they just comparing those two, it really now is like the NBA is leaving Major League Baseball in the dust, and the long-term effects on this game, especially over this last couple of months, could be really bad for baseball.
Yeah, what do you guys think some of the ramifications will be? Like, if you could kind of look down the road, are there any like big concerns that like immediately pop out to you?
Strike in 2021. I think it's bound to happen. I think as soon as this CBA hits, the players are striking, and I think we're going to have a 2020 season, maybe a 2021 season. I don't know exactly when the CBA ends, but as soon as that CBA ends, I think if they're already having bad faith negotiations now, it's going to be worse by the time they want a whole new CBA where the money dynamic has changed, and you're going to have a free agency period where owners are not going to want to pay players and some of the best players in the world, like Mookie Betts, for example. It's going to get really nasty for a while.
Yeah, I could see another strike happening. I think that it's just in terms of long-term popularity among American sports and attendance, I think that stuff is going to go down. It's going to be similar to what happened in 94. And I wrote about this on the blog the past couple of days, that the documentary Long Gone Summer that came out this week, it's kind of the first 5 minutes talked about the 94 strike. And it's a reminder of what is at risk here, because baseball wasn't really popular again until 1998 with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. So it's going to need something like that, something to captivate the United States in that way. But of course, you know, we don't have steroids users, or not as widespread anymore. So probably not going to have two guys hitting 60 home runs in the same season. So I don't know what's going to happen that will captivate the nation like they did.
Yeah, but that's a lesson in history in itself too, because like you said, I mean, the steroid era, to me, I'm a harsh critic, even though, you know, I spent some time on the first baseline watching Mark McGwire do his thing. during that season and when he was in St. Louis. But like, I was a really young kid then, you know, I didn't really have much context, but now looking back on it, you know, you kind of look at that era and you're like, well, you're right, Matt. Like, I mean, they had to do something to get people back, and it comes off gimmicky now that we look back on it. I don't want that to happen. You guys, like, I don't want it to have to be a gimmick to draw, you know, the masses back to baseball.
I'm telling you, make your own dream team. I said this a couple weeks. Actually, Andrew and I talked about this last week when Frick popped up the idea in the pod. I told him my idea to make an Olympic dream team for baseball, and I think it's something that's not really gimmicky, kind of, but it's something that's simple that could be done. But I think we're very, very down a very long road, but you kind of touched on it. We're going to get a little positive here. We're going to talk about baseball. We're talking about fanhood, and something is interesting. You're probably someone I know personally. You're connected to the Richmond sports scene, the Virginia sports scene, better than anyone I know. And obviously, ESPN Richmond is the home for the Washington Nationals, obviously the defending World Series champ. So you were definitely connected to that team a lot. How did it feel just covering that team during that run where they made that historic comeback to make the postseason and then go on a championship run? Because I remember out here in Kansas watching it, and I remember when the team like first founded and they're playing in a football stadium to start out, and now to kind of just grow and form its own team. It definitely felt sentimental.
It did. And, you know, I got to cover some of the games. I got to be up at the All-Star game. That's my only good memory of Bryce Harper, by the way. Not a big Bryce Harper fan here. We can maybe get more into that in a little bit. But yeah, no, you're exactly right. I like to break things down, but I also like to make hot takes. And it wasn't even a hot take that the Nationals were out of the race in the middle of the season. Like, it was done. Like, it was just an established thing in the sports talk radio scene and like the microcosm of, you know, the month of June. It just, they were done. Like, it was over. They were out of it. And then suddenly they rallied, they turned their season around. They all come together, baby shark. Like, they just become like just good friends almost like immediately. It's almost like they found the love of baseball all over again, just playing together, which is really inspiring and cool. And especially, you know, for someone who, like you said, I'm embedded in the scene, Ryan Zimmerman, Sean Doolittle, those are UVA guys. Sorry, y'all. I know that's a tough subject for you, but like that was kind of a cool thing to see. But I thought it was awesome. I thought it was one of the best turnaround stories in, you know, a year where we had a lot of turnaround stories. A year where my Blues bounced back after being the worst, you know, team in hockey. So there, sports provides that, and like that's one of the reasons that I do think that we do have somewhat of a need for it. But the national story and Davey, like everyone wanted Davey's job. I love that story, man.
Yeah. And it also shows why we can't have a 50 game season. Cause they were, I think 19 and 31 in the first 50 games. And you think about that, they went on to win the championship. So it's definitely, and you kind of touched on it. You're also a Cardinals fan. So your mom's from St. Louis, growing up a Cardinals fan. So like me, you didn't pick a local team. Matt kind of picked a local team in the Braves because obviously there was the Richmond Braves then when we were youngins back in the day. But so you talk about the Cardinals. So who's probably – was McGuire your favorite card growing up? And then you kind of found out – you touched on the steroid era, found out what was up, and then you kind of changed maybe to a Pujols guy?
Yep, that's exactly right. And Scott Rolen, loved him. He was awesome. I know Phillies fans, again, mixed emotions there, but – yeah, him, Jim Edmonds, Chris Carpenter, even when Mulder came over, you know, from the A's to St. Louis, I really was a big fan of him. Adam Wainwright obviously was a Brave, and, you know, he's a closer. He comes over and becomes a starting pitcher and is instrumental, you know, in helping them win the World Series. David Freese was a hero in a micro moment against the Rangers, hitting that ball off the wall, which turned that whole series around in 2011. But, yeah, I think Pujols is one of my favorite athletes of all time. Like what he meant for that town and his ability to do everything. I mean, move from a left fielder, you know, to a right fielder, played first base, won a gold glove at first base. He can hit, you know, for singles, he can hit for average, he can hit for power. He just has a good eye for the baseball, was always a good, calm teammate. I honestly think Albert Pujols is my personal GOAT when it comes to baseball. I know that's probably one that'll draw some people's ire, but he's a legend to me.
I think I'd have to rank him in my top 10, definitely, maybe top 5. I mean, he is one of the greatest of all time. What was your reaction almost a decade ago now when he left St. Louis and signed with the Angels?
I understood. I didn't love it. I know he wanted to, you know, try something new, and I knew he would always be kind of a part of the St. Louis community, not maybe like, you know, Stan Musial, who's always hanging around or somebody like that. But like, I knew he would always be a part of it. I really didn't have a big problem with it because he had won two World Series with St. Louis. So I thought it was a good move for him personally. I was skeptical of how it would pay off professionally, and clearly now we're seeing it's kind of caused his career to bottom out completely.
Trey and I actually talked about this a couple weeks ago on the podcast. We usually look at one player each week and try to determine whether or not they'll be a Hall of Famer. So a few weeks ago we talked about Yadier Molina. What are your thoughts on that? I don't remember what we said. I think
we said he would get in. It was definitely close, but not his first ballot, but
he will get in.
Yeah.
I think he will get in. I think it's mostly going to be because of his fielding and because of his leadership and the fact that he is a Cardinal mainstay. I think that helps, because when you stick with a franchise like that, I mean, it really does, especially, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals, which are, you know, big time Major League Baseball franchise, as everybody knows. I think he will get in. I could agree with that. I don't necessarily think because his, you know, hitting, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I do think he will get in.
I think we said that. I think we kind of talked about, like, he was one of the best at his position for a period of time. And to me, like, statistics, like, matter to some point. But if you literally just have to watch and, like, you're like, he's the best at his position, then it's insane. Because you think about it, like, back in the 20s, if a guy hit 10 home runs, that's hitting, like, 50, like, 40 today. So, like, statistics are so variable on the game. And especially playing catcher, like, I could probably name like three catchers who were top hitters in baseball, like all time. Like Piazza, obviously probably the greatest hitting catcher of all time. I guess today it would be Gary Sanchez, the Sanchez, the Kraken, whatever it may be. Like there, you mainly judge a catcher on his fielding ability and the ability behind the plate.
Yeah. Do you guys think that because we now have like this next level appreciation for what catchers, you know, do defensively, managing the game on the field, that'll probably help them a little bit?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it should. I mean, that's something that we didn't have to look at for the majority of baseball history. So now I think that once we can see what they really provide for the team, the value they give, I think that should definitely help him.
So how do you think about the way the Cardinals are structured right now? I know it's not been best couple of seasons. They're obviously in a really tough division full of some good teams. Obviously, the Cubs won World Series recently. You had the Brewers with Christian Yelich, who might be the best player in baseball right now, other than Mike Trout. Second best, I think the best competition in baseball for the second best player in baseball, because, you know, everyone knows who number one is. And the Reds obviously are improving. So what do you think about the Cardinals in a division, if we have baseball, that could be very, very competitive?
Well, first, and this is coming from a Cardinals fan, so everyone respect this, leave Christian Yelich's mom alone on Twitter. Y'all are messed up. That's absolutely messed up. But yes, no, I think I like picking Jordan at third. I think that's been kind of a spot that we've moved a lot of guys around. But I trust that our defense, I feel like St. Louis – so 2 years ago we were a bad defensive team. St. Louis was a bad defensive team, like one of the worst, most error-ridden teams in all of baseball. Last season they improved significantly in that department, and they've always been a franchise when they succeed at the highest level, they play small ball at the best level. Certainly they have some stars that can bolster that. We've gone over those, but I just think pitching and small ball has always been the crux of the Cardinals organization. They always seem to find a couple of pitchers in their farm system, which has always been, again, one of the better farm systems in all of baseball. I think they can contend. I like how they handled the Braves, because I do think, you know, on paper, the Braves were a better team than St. Louis last year. But I did think that it was, you know, overachieving a little bit to win that series, and especially the way they won it was such a crazy way, just to basically blow the Braves out of the series. But you know, I'd pick them to probably finish second. I think the Cubs have a bounce back year if they were able to do that. I think the Brewers and the Cardinals are capable of winning 80 plus games, but I think the Cubs would have a bounce back season if we were to play, you know, the full slate or whatever percentage, I think that would be Cubs, Cards, Brewers for me.
Appreciate you for taking some time out of your week for talking to us. We'd love thanks for the question last week. And so what do you think about Mike Trout?
I like Mike Trout. The Top Golf video was great and it went viral. And yeah, I'm a big fan of Mike Trout. I think he's somebody who I don't get bothered by the fact that he doesn't have this cool brand that everyone's always talking about. I just think it's cool that he is who he is and he's just, you know, happy to play baseball.
All right. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this week and talking about the Cardinals and the disarray that Major League Baseball is in right now. We appreciate your insight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all.
We got a little positivity in there.
A little bit.
True. I need some positivity for John Sheff too. How's he doing in Hokie Land?
I think he's doing all right. I think he's turning things around. You know, it's a process. It's going to take a little bit, but they had two high draft picks this year, so that's good for the program. And they didn't get to play the whole season this year, obviously, so tough to tell how they would have done. But I think this was his third season there, I think. So I think they're moving in the right direction.
That's awesome.
All right, thanks again to Andrew Wallace joining us on this week's edition of Foul Ball Area. By the way, the whole Major League Baseball fiasco that we were talking about, Rob Manfred is just really the most incompetent major sports commissioner in the United States. Last Wednesday, during ESPN's broadcast of the Major League Baseball draft, he told Carl Ravitch that unequivocally he was 100% sure they would play baseball this year. And then 5 days later, he walks those comments back and says he's not confident. And basically what's going on right now is the players have stopped negotiating because the owners aren't giving them what they want. So they've stopped negotiating. Rob Manfred has the power to unilaterally set the schedule for the 2020 season. And that's what the players are saying. They're saying, tell us when and where to play and we'll play. We're done trying to get what we want. We just want to play baseball. And now Manfred is saying that that's not going to happen. And basically what some players like Trevor Bauer think is happening is that if he sets a 50 game season right now, then the players would be able to file a grievance and say, well, you didn't try in good faith to negotiate for as many games as possible. So right now he's stalling, saying he's not confident that there will be a season, so that this whole process will go on for another 2 to 3 weeks. And then by that point, he can set a 50 game season. And that'll be realistic for how much time has gone by and how much time they have left to play the season. So basically, Rob Manfred is stalling for time, trying to implement a 50-game season later in the summer, and they don't want the players to be able to file a grievance against them. It's a whole big mess. The owners and the commissioner and the league are just incompetent and unable to figure out how to return to play. The players, they've said multiple times that they're ready. Just tell them when and where to play. And they are ready. They will play baseball. I don't know what's going to happen. I think that it's time to find a new hobby for the summer because I'm not confident that there will be Major League Baseball.
I agree. I think as these days go by, I just don't like it. Changes every week for me. Like at one point, I thought we were going to have it. At one point, I didn't think so. And now more and more, I don't think we will. It kind of pissed me off seeing that last night. To be frank, like, what person in their right mind just says that? Like if you're Rob Manfred, like I think optics is one of the easiest things you can control in anything you do. The way you are perceived or the way the thing looks in an issue is something you can control. And all he had to say was, I think we still are going to have a baseball season. Like, that's all he had to say. Like, or just don't say 100%. Like, plain and simple. And honestly, and I highly recommend, if you're a baseball fan, follow Andrew McCutchen. And he posted a video basically explaining what was going on with his son. It was him and then a kid voice and his juice. And not getting juice, he got water instead in different forms. And so just watch it. Like, the thing people forget are the players and the owners had an agreement in April, and this could have been done many, many months ago. They could have said, look, if everything is ready by July X, we are going to play an 82-game season, we're going to go in October, and we're going to neutral site games in the World Series. Like, That's all they had to do. Like, this could have been done so much long ago, and now we're having body blow after body blow. And I think we're going to have baseball because I still am holding out hope, but I just don't know. And it just frustrates me that we're getting to this point. Like, and for someone who loves the game of baseball, I'm just scared more for the long-term effects, because it might not affect this season as much as people think, but the next 5 years, this pandemic's going to affect, and it's going to be bad.
Yeah, it is. There are going to be long-term effects, and they're not going to be good. And it's going to be really bad if other leagues like the NBA and the NHL can get back to playing and Major League Baseball can't. Yeah, it's going to be bad. It's going to be terrible. But let's talk about some, well, I don't know if this is even going to be positive. Let's do our weekly Hall of Fame discussion. And it's a unique discussion this week because we're going to have three players that we're talking about all together. If you didn't watch it, ESPN had a new 30 for 30 debut on Sunday called Long Gone Summer, and it focused on the 1998 home run chase between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. And you can read my review and my thoughts on the blog at foulballarea.com. Make sure to check that out. I didn't think it was great, but it was good to have some baseball content back. But it has ignited the conversation, once again, on whether or not these known steroid users should be in the Hall of Fame. And so we're going to talk about Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and Barry Bonds. And I think that most people would agree, just looking at their stats, yes, they should be in the Hall of Fame. But they are linked to the steroids era, the steroid scandal. Mark McGwire admitted to using steroids. Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa have never admitted to using. So it's a tough decision for some people. Some people are like, yeah, put them in. Who cares if they use steroids? Look at the stats. Put them in. Others say that they cheated. They should be kept out. So I don't know. It's a tough decision. Where do you stand, Trey?
They all belong in the Hall of Fame.
It's not a tough decision for Trey. It's
no
ifs, ands, or buts.
No, I think Pete Rose belongs in the Hall of Fame too. Look, it's an era that happened in baseball, and I think people needed to just accept that. Like, it was something that most people just were like, we're going to do this. And I also think if you really do something, like, especially for Barry Bonds, let's just look at Barry Bonds' career pre-steroids. He's one of the greatest baseball players ever without the steroid stats. Like, you take that away, this dude was one of the best outfielders in the history of the game. He, at the plate, he was dynamic. Like, and someone put it this way. Steroids are for recovery. Like, they add strength. They were mainly used for recovery, not for, like, that's why people mainly use steroids, is so that they could gain power and recover. You can have all the power in the world. Doesn't mean you're going to hit a curveball. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, you still have to be able to hit the ball. You still have to be able to make contact, even if you are taking steroids. Like, so that example, is true. I get that.
If you juice me up right now and throw me on a major league diamond, I'm not going to hit 73 home runs. Yes, they cheated. And yes, it's wrong. I accept that. And it's the same thing with Pete Rose. But you just can't, like, you can't have the all-time home run leader and the all-time hits leader not in the Hall of Fame. In football, the only reason the all-time touchdown leader is not in the Hall of Fame is because he's still freaking playing in Drew Brees. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't want to put them in the Hall of Fame. I don't want to enshrine them and glorify them because they did cheat. Yes, their stats are still amazing.
Cheating happened.
They were good forever. Baseball players, but they cheated, and so that's my hesitation. To say
all
yes,
right, so
they
my
should be
question
in the Hall of Fame.
Is, will Jose Altuve be a Hall of Famer?
I don't know. You know, the writers, when it comes time for him to be evaluated, they might look at this sign stealing scandal and they might say he cheated. We're not going to put him in. I don't know.
So here's the thing: I would accept if basically you took a player and looked at him pre steroids, like especially with Bonds. Like, you look at Bonds with the Pirates and then his early. Like, because Bonds really didn't do, like, steroids till he got to, what, 99? So his first half of his career, he by then was was a three-time MVP. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-time Gold Glove. I mean, like, this guy
was, I don't know. See, this is why I say it's tough, because I mean, you are right. Pretty much everyone was doing it back then, and there was a point where it was not a rule in Major League Baseball that you couldn't use steroids. And with the way testing was inconsistent back then, it's tough to know exactly who was and who wasn't doing it. So everything is shady. And yeah, the guys like McGuire and Sosa, they did do great things for the game and making it popular again in 1998. I don't know. That's why I say it's tough. It's a difficult decision, and I don't know if I can really give my answer.
I can, because I just believe in the fact that, like, steroids made you, yes, they made you stronger, but like in terms of your actual ability, like your ability to play the game, and you think about it like this: if I took steroids, could I play baseball? Absolutely not. Like, think about it like that. You had to be a certain level of good of a baseball player, and then you had the steroids to boast with it. Like, minor leaguers were taking steroids. You didn't see a guy who goes from the minors to an all-star level in a year because he got HGH. Like, I think you got to think about it in terms of, like, the time. Like, if this was something – like, A-Rod's different because A-Rod was a lot more post-steroids here. Like, to me, A-Rod's a little bit different, just the way he kind of tried to damage the game to save himself. But to me, I don't feel like Barry Bonds, Mark McGuire, and Sammy Sosa's intention with steroids was to damage the game of baseball. It was to make it better. And you think about it, without steroids, baseball could be in a whole lot different place where there's not much at risk for these labor negotiations going on right now.
Yeah. That's true. Here's something interesting. We put this on all of our social media channels yesterday. If you could pick one player from the 90s to build your team around, who would you choose? Bonds, McGuire, Griffey, or Sosa? The majority chose Ken Griffey Jr. So I think that's not steroid.
I agree. I would actually probably pick Ken Griffey Jr. because he's one of my favorite players of all time. But I'd be very, very hardly considering Barry Bonds because of – watch Barry Bonds as not looks like he was roided up, and he's still one of the – he's one of the great baseball players. This is a guy who has 7 MVPs.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. Like, and the people who voted for MVP are the same people who voted in the Hall of Fame. And I bet you they knew he was on steroids when they voted for him for MVP. Just saying.
Well, that's our Hall of Fame discussion for the week. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of Foul Ball Area. For Trey Lyle, I'm Matthew Atkins. Thanks again to Andrew Wallace for joining us. We'll see you next week.